Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, Rangers of the Dork Forest. It's me, Jackie Cation, and you are listening to the Dork Forest. You can go to the websites, JackieCation.com and DorkForest.com. JackieCation.com has DorkForest.com. It has the audio links. It has the video links to my YouTube. It has all of my dates for stand-up comedy. It has all the merch. It's got Dork Forest merch and stand-up merch and all of my CDs and DVDs if you have those devices. Other things you can do, Bandcamp. There's a Bandcamp with the very old episodes. Some of them are free. And then there's a storytelling album that you can get on my Bandcamp. And I'm on Pandora and Spotify. It is 2025, and feel free to start donating to the Dork Forest. Yeah, cost me about 10 grand a year to put this up. If everybody donated $100 every year, if everybody just handed me $100 every time they saw me, or PayPal, Venmo, then I would have, I think, about 10 grand. I don't know, but I would have enough money to run this and probably buy myself lunch. And I'm a big fan of doing the show. I'll do it anyway. But if you have $100, send me $100. If you have $2, send me $2. You can do it monthly on PayPal. There's buttons all over my website. And my Venmo is just my name. No hyphen, Jackie Cation. I'm wearing a red shirt. Let's get into the show. Hello and welcome, Rangers, to the Dork Forest. I'm in a hotel in Indiana. Very exciting. JackieCation.com for all your, where am I touring? Right now, this week on the Dork Forest, I'm with Adam Korga, who sent me an email and said that he had written a book about, with an IT dictionary, something I think we all need, first of all. And second of all, what the hell is that? So here's what you should know is that it's called the IT Dictionary, and it's a book, and it's available to pre-order now on Amazon and wherever you get books. And on the 30th of September of 2025, it'll be published. So that's what you should know. Adam Korga, K-O-R-G-A. Welcome to the show, Adam. How's it going?
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me, and I'm super happy to be here.
Yes. Okay. So here's what I know about IT. It's constantly changing. No. So do you do IT? Do you write code?
Not anymore. I've been working in IT for almost 20 years in various roles. So it is written by experience, and all the apps that I'm describing are experience.
Initial
tests say that people start looking around behind their backs if I didn't observe them at work when I was translating what the situation. So.
Okay, first of all, let's start at the beginning. What does IT stand for?
Information technology. So basically, it's very serious.
Yes, information technology.
At least on paper.
Yes, and information technology. Okay, and it mostly stands for coding now, right?
Everything related to computers, pretty much coding software. The recording that we're doing is using software. Software needs to run on some servers, so it's not only coding, because there are some clouds and all this yada yada yada. So pretty much whenever you use your phone, your TV, your computer, and so on, you are using products from IT.
So it's software and hardware.
Yes. Everything related to computers.
Okay. So information technology. All right. So if you do coding or have that coding knowledge that and now you've written a book, do you also do like network support, or is that a separate job?
So I actually do something related to network support. It is also part of IT. It's
right.
There are countless specialties.
Right.
I'm personally doing something related to networks and clouds and yada, yada, yada. But maybe we need to calm down. The book is not another academic dictionary. It is translation of how the industry really looks like under the hood once you strip all the academic jargon and stuff. So it is, think of it like, let's say, Dilbert, but in book form and more, and
Dilbert.
Sometimes a little bit technical, but not really.
Not really. Okay. So what you're doing is you're taking all of the IT jargon and you're explaining what the heck it really means. Is that what the book is? Or
kinda. So basically the book is divided into five parts. First is core IT, which is framed as a survival manual, which translates how people, engineers are actually communicating with the rest of organizations. Then there is Agile Rituals and Other Cargo Cults, which is this framing one of the core philosophy of IT software development, which is Agile. I won't bore you with details, into cargo cults. So basically just repeating the rituals without understanding why.
Okay. Okay. Oh, religion.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. The third part is titled Corpulent, where ideas go to get aligned, which is basically framing entire corporation world into full bureaucratic managed democracy, where legal, HR, and finance decides on everything.
Okay.
On the opposite spectrum, fourth part describes Startupistan, which is totally opposite end of the spectrum, which is startups and total anarchy of failed state, revolution states, and this kind of stuff. And last, of course, because, hey, we need to be trendy, AI, new kid in town, where it's personalized as a transfer student that just came to town. He's very charismatic. Everybody wants to befriend him, but nobody understands what he says.
Right, because he's got all these different ways of communicating. So wait, the AI thing is funny just because I, as you can imagine, I have a podcast called The Dork Forest. And so one of my friends insists that it is not, we're not working with AI yet. We're working with something called LLM. And
yes.
Which
is a form of AI.
AI is the umbrella, and then LLM stands for language something. I don't understand.
Large language model. So basically, it's statistically speaking, it has countless, we are talking about hundreds of millions, if not billions, of text documents in various languages and stuff. And basically, of course, I'm oversimplifying here, but basically it doesn't understand what we're talking. It basically gets
oversimplify.
That's one of my goals, by the way. We can mention this in a moment because I have some next ideas for books. But generally, the thing is that it pretty much gets the input and analyzes statistically what's the most probable next word.
Like that.
So it's not so-called AGI. It is AI, it's not AGI. But
what's AGI? So what's the G stand for?
This is very scary thing that I hope that won't happen fast.
Okay.
So basically AGI stands for Artificial General Intelligence, which would be pretty much Skynet. So basically AI, artificial intelligence, is an algorithm that can learn and analyze data and yada yada yada. AGI is really human-like intelligence, at least theoretical abstract concept of human-like intelligence that can do the full reasoning, full learning new stuff that it never tried. So it is a next level. And once we reach it without some boundaries like ethics and other concepts that some people consider optional.
Yes.
That would be scary.
That is scary. because much like humans, there's already a bunch of humans who don't have any ethics. So if there was a machine that didn't have any ethics, I don't even know what that would look like. But I know what humans without ethics look like, and it's a pain in the ass. So
actually, no, there are very few people without ethics. They have some ethics, maybe not compatible with what we consider. There are sociopaths, but
okay.
Consider there is a quite known mental exercise. This experiment didn't happen, as far as I know.
Okay.
But consider an algorithm machine controlling military drones with a mission to destroy some target. Actually, U.S. Army was doing this kind of mental exercise. They didn't do this in the real life.
Okay.
And the mission is destroy the target. That's the top mission, and avoid everything on the way. Or maybe destroy any obstacles.
Okay.
And now what happens if from the control tower there arrives the order to cancel the mission?
Right.
For the human, it's obvious that we cancel the mission. But if we didn't code we didn't provide unspoken limitations in the algorithm, then the computer algorithm could decide that this is an obstacle and attack a control tower because, hey, it needs to eliminate all obstacles to achieve the goal.
Right.
These kind of nuances. Sorry, the voice disappeared.
Oh, did it?
Now it's good. Now it's back.
Okay. So the movie War Games from the 80s with Matthew Broderick was clearly that. It was a simulator to sort of play out nuclear war between the Soviet Union and the United States. And the computer didn't understand that they tried to cancel it and the computer actually was like, well, no, we're going to run this through. This is my job is to launch these missiles. And they, so there's War Games, and then no, Real Genius was different. I don't know if you ever saw Real Genius with Val Kilmer.
Real Genius is something I don't recall. I do recall War Games.
Okay. So I don't know I don't know if War Games holds up. I know that Real Genius does not hold up very well just because there's a lot of nakedy girls and for no reason except for that nerds. It turns out scientific men also would like to get laid. So so if you're going to make a movie about nerd girls, nerd guys, they're going to be like, wouldn't it be great if girls were hanging around? And so that's what that movie is about. But there's also obviously the plot where they make lasers that you can shoot from space and bad guys take it over. Anyway, so AGI, this AGI thing sounds, it does sound fictional. And yet all things that are fictional, you tell a scientist this and he's like, what do you want to do?
Well, to be precise, AGI is not, it's not something we achieved so far, but it's not fictional. No. We are aiming for towards it. And given the pace of development of artificial intelligence, it will happen. It's a matter of time.
Okay. Yeah.
Only thing that I hope, and it's actually mentioned in the book, is that there will be some ethical committees that will really standardize this kind of implicit assumptions, because otherwise it can be fun. There are a lot of nuances or fictional sci-fi stories describing what could happen if we don't put some restraints on the AGI.
Right, because I think with all science there's always some ethical question, but with coding, okay, so let's start from the beginning. The the first part is this core ID.
Yes.
Right. So what think I don't know what I'm talking about, and then you will know exactly where I am, because I don't know what I'm talking about. So what is it So it's a it's survival. You know, the joke is that it's the survival part of it, but it's also true. So what is core ID?
Okay, so maybe before I answer, maybe I will give a small backstory how I came up with this, and this will already set up stage. So basically, I was dating some girl that was working in a legal department in a company, and she had contact with people from IT. And I decided to come up with a, and that's also the source of the origin of the title, with a dictionary of some terms that people, engineers can use to pretty much say that the user is an idiot in a way that user wouldn't understand that we are, that he's being ridiculed.
Sure.
So there are, or how to say that they are pretending they to do work, sound smart, but basically saying we have no idea what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So it literally started like that. Then the dating ended and I continued with the book.
Fair enough. I'm so sorry. Or
I'm not.
Congratulations. You're it not. Happens. It's like, fine. It didn't work out. Yes.
Yeah. So basically it started with literally the first part is titled how to say user is an idiot. And entire book is framed in, most of the book is framed in the tables term, what it sounds like and what it really means. And
most
it
of
starts,
the book is set up as tables? Did you write a book that's essentially a giant Excel spreadsheet?
No, it's more like a glossary, but...
All right, just curious. Okay.
But basically, every line is a standalone joke in the.
Oh my God! I do want a copy. Show us a picture of the book, if you would. Guys, you got to go to YouTube if you want to see it. Now, open it and show me a couple of pages. Oh yeah, that's pretty sweet. Anyway,
but there are
you're in the right place. Can I just say that, Adam? You're in the right place.
There are some separate sections with some longer forms.
Some stories. Yeah.
Yeah, some, not that many, but just to break the rhythm. And every section has its own introduction with different satire motif. To the part. So first part, every introduction is stylized as a combat manual. In second, which is religion, so you have a religious mystical tones.
Okay.
Third is corporation, so it is overly formalized.
Okay.
Fourth is failed revolutionary state, so it is pretty much Soviet agitprop and this kind of topics. So it gives some narrative, but what I tried to say, for instance, you have a term picnic. Which pretty much is an acronym for problem in chair, not in computer.
Okay. Problem. Okay. Say it slowly. Problem in
chair, not in computer.
Not in computer. Oh, that is very funny.
That basically says that the software is fine, user is doing something weird. Another example, code. You're in US, so I will go with Imperial version, which is code 18.
Code 18?
Yes, it sounds like error 18, so it sounds official. It basically means that the error is 18 inches away from the monitor.
Which is the person. Yes.
Again. Yep. There are a lot of this kind of terms.
Right. Well, yeah, that's because you're trying to fix something and you're like, no, you're not. And so I'm sure you just come up with this. It's essentially the.
So those are code words that it's not in real life. They are not used that often, but sometimes you can say this, especially when the customer is listening.
Yeah.
That every other engineer would understand, non-technical customer might not.
Right. It's just a joke within the group. And then
every industry has something like that. IT also.
Yep.
There are also terms or phrases that sound very official, and under the hood, it means we have no idea what's going on.
Do you have favorite, like, is there one that you use just in conversation that isn't that, you know, where you're just, you're out to dinner and you're just, all of a sudden you just say, well, I don't know.
Well,
instead of saying, I don't know, you just go because the thing is about language is that it's so fascinating. Like, first of all, Adam, how many languages do you speak?
Fluently three.
Okay.
English, Polish, and German.
Okay.
Well, German is a little bit exaggeration with fluent, but I can communicate.
Okay.
I also could read and communicate in basic Russian.
In basic Russian. Okay.
Yes.
So you could order.
But for me it's
dinner.
Easy because I'm native Polish, so it's still Slavic language. So.
Right. It's right there. And sadly, okay, it is also right fucking there.
It's still Slavic language, so linguistically speaking, it's doable,
it's close?
Let's say.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, fair enough. So when you're at dinner and you and there is there slang just from this part? I'm sure there might be from the other chapters or from the other versions. But is there any time you're just sort of sitting around and you'll just say one of the things that is essentially engineer speak?
I try not to. Of course.
Okay.
Engineering, every nerd has own vocabulary, but
yes.
But I tend or aim to cut this jargon. So sometimes I do throw jokes that people with different background wouldn't understand, but I still try to be accessible for others.
Yeah, well, that's why you wrote the book, is so that it's accessible for everybody. But if you were at dinner with another engineer or somebody and you were telling a story.
There would be some jokes, yeah. But let's just say it wouldn't be the stereotypical way of, like, you can sometimes see the nerds in Hollywood movies when every sentence sounds like a
framed
mix of some terms. So
nobody's living like that. No, everyone's just having a normal.
Probably, yeah. I don't even realize when I throw this kind of joke. So.
So my question, I guess, is more specific. What's one of your favorite lines? That just comes up when you're just living your life is what I'm thinking. You're just like, oh, look at this code 18. Look at this.
Nah, those are not something I'm using that often.
Right.
Probably
you might not.
The most common out of this section that I'm doing is PEPKA. Mm-hmm.
How do you spell that?
PEKBAC.
Deckbach.
P.
What is that?
Problem exists between
David?
Keyboard and chair.
Oh, between keyboard and chair. Okay. So my friend Andrew has been on this program and he has t-shirts that say stuff like this. And I think he would love your book. And so everybody, you should know that you can get the book on the third at the end of the month. September 30th. It's called IT Dictionary. And it's essentially a glossary with introductory paragraphs and prose.
Well, it is more a kind of meta commentary of what doesn't work in this industry, but framed as a satirical dictionary.
Okay. So I think it's kind of perfect for people who know just enough. Like the people who are dipped like you would be like, yes, 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 yes. But the people who want to get that joke of the one more level
I really tried to make it accessible. So people who have any experience, any contact, or even from corporate enterprise world or corporations, startups, or even once used some AI. It's enough to understand, of course, not everything, but most of the joke inside. And also sometimes maybe partially understand why, again, software doesn't work like people expect.
Why doesn't software like people expect it?
Yeah, so that's interesting topic. That's all. Now we're entering really darkness area.
Just a little bit of real world. We'll come back.
Yeah. So
do you have a theory why software doesn't work like we expect it to?
Yeah, because it's too complex, and sometimes it's not possible to come up how people would abuse the system. Not use abuse. It's okay. Just. As somebody, I never remember who said it, but I really like this quote, that software engineering is a constant race between engineers trying to design better and more idiot-proof software, and the universe that delivers better and better idiots. So far, the universe is winning.
Yes, I think that could be applied to any number of industries.
But.
Unplanned pregnancy? Learn how people are getting abortion pills by mail for a safe abortion at home, no matter what state they live in, at plancypills.org. That's plancypills.org.
Maybe fun fact to give you illustration how complex software really is. You know the Apollo 16 landing on the moon and so on.
Yep.
There was a space shuttle which had computer on board. Do you know that compute power of the computer used there was smaller than not your phone, was smaller than the charger for your phone?
Oh.
Yes.
Like was less complicated or less
had slower CPU and less memory than the charger for your smartphone. Yes.
So this brick, this charger brick,
yes,
is what's
had faster CPU and memory, most likely faster CPU and memory than entire compute on Apollo 16 that landed on the moon.
On the Apollo 16 that landed on the moon. I have two questions. One is, this has a computer chip in it? I did not know that this charger has a computer chip in it. I thought for some reason it was just a battery. Almost everything does. Does it have a computer chip in it because it has to communicate with the phone?
All those fast charging chargers with fast charging. Do they have that fast charging compatible with your phone and blah blah blah?
And the car,
phones also have different
just
standards
phones
for fast charging.
Okay,
so just to control the energy flow, there is a small microchip that decides when to cut off the energy, how much,
of course,
voltage should be there, and so on. That's a chip that is in the phone, in the charger.
And that is more complicated and faster.
It's maybe the algorithm itself is not more complicated, but the compute power of the this microchip is bigger. It is faster and has more memory.
So does that mean? Like, what were they using the computer? This is a very basic question that I'm sure I will be. What were they using the computer for to fly the ship? Because it was the landing vehicle, right? Is that what you're talking about? Or
no,
any?
Basically, everything from the starting of the rocket. Okay, the rocket is a little bit more complex, but from starting the rocket, controlling the entire engine operations, when to drop the booster rockets, when to modify the flight trajectory between Earth and Moon, then landing itself. That was all. All the data was computer controlled.
That was all computer controlled. So
it's not like Neil Armstrong had a joystick and was flying. No.
Why am I?
No, no, no. It's not like that.
No,
it was computerized.
It was all computerized.
Option to interrupt and stuff, but yes, it was most of the flight control was computer.
So we didn't actually have to send any people.
we did. The first landing, as far as I recall, was without people. So yeah, we didn't.
It's true, but not the moon landing. The moon landing, but they did send things. You know what I've got? Not enough information, Adam. That's what I've
got. I don't remember the history of the space conquest, but I think the first landing on the moon was with human. But I don't quote me on that.
No. They might have just sent a machine to with a camera, and then they sent people. We may never know. That's a different episode of The Dork Forest. Let's continue with what's the cargo? What was that one?
Cargo Cult?
Yeah.
Okay. So Cargo Cult is not my invention. It's a historical reference. You can Google that. So basically, okay. It is a reference to I don't remember where, somewhere in Indonesia, I think, but I'm not sure. Primal tribes during World War II, U.S. Okay. Army, Navy, whatever. I always confuse those.
Okay.
Dropping some supplies to them from the airplanes just to buy their loyalty. In hopes that in case something happens, they would work together. Then World War II finished. So the drops finished. And those people living there didn't understand what happened. They didn't understand that was much, much more advanced civilization dropping from the airport airplanes. They didn't even imagine the concept of airplanes.
Okay.
But they were considered them gods, kinda.
Okay.
So once the drops finished, they started producing, reproducing the rituals, like for instance, building control towers from bamboo,
Okay.
Hoping that the gods would come back. So that's literally what happened. So Cargo Cult nowadays is a ritual of repeating a process of repeating the ritual with absolute no understanding of underlying principles and mechanism.
Okay. That, first of all, I love the perspective of, but in code,
this is not about code, it's about organization. So.
Oh, it's about organization.
Basically, the three agile are a principle or methodologies of how to organize big team, small teams or medium teams to make them work to multiple people to work together towards the project. There are different methodologies. There is waterfall, agile, scrum, kanban, yada yada. Never mind. Agile is a big umbrella of flexible techniques to manage the project, but still be flexible enough to keep the organization flexible enough to adapt to changes and misunderstanding and whatnot. There are some rituals. They have very solid reasoning and grounding.
Okay.
But it became so popular and twisted so many ways that a lot of organizations just repeat those rituals without understanding the real principles behind that or mechanisms, and it became a kind of modern cargo cult.
Are you talking about Mini Muffin Monday? Like, what are you talking about?
So, for instance, the daily stand-up. There is a concept that entire team spends 15 minutes to exchange updates.
Okay.
Which generally comes down to answering what I did yesterday, what I'm planning to do today, and what obstacles do I have.
Okay.
Or blockers. That's on high level.
Okay.
But if we go into, okay, it should be 15 minutes and I need to answer those three questions, then it is a ritual. It doesn't bring a value. Everybody else will just pretend that they are listening and just counting time until they can give their own answers to three questions and okay, hey, let's go back. It's no longer a tool for or meeting to synchronize within the team to move forward.
Right.
It's just a ritual that needs to be repeated.
Right. It's just essentially just checking in, but there's no point and purpose to it.
Exactly.
When everybody could just be spending, I mean, if there's six people, that's an hour and a half.
Yep.
Essentially, you just cut into the workday.
No, usually it is at the beginning of the day, so it's kind of come to the office or start working if you're on a remote.
Right.
Check your email, check Reddit, drink coffee, then have stand-up, and then start pretending that you're working.
Right, exactly. And nobody's working more than 6 hours a day anyway, so I guess it doesn't really matter.
I think statistically 6 hours in IT, sorry for interrupting, but I think statistics suggest that if in IT, if somebody works 6 hours, really works 6 hours a day, he's probably already overworked and burning out.
Oh, okay. Yeah. See, this is, now I digress again. This is the entire show, by the way, Adam. Anyway, is that my husband, Andy Ashcraft, he's been on the program several times, is constantly saying that he's not getting enough work done because he's only working 4 or 5 hours a day. And I was like, nobody, absolutely no one is working more than 4 or 5 hours a day in any sort of project or any, like he makes video games for a living and he would go in and he said, you know, when I go into the office, I'm working. And I'm like, no, you aren't. You're chatting with the guy in the next cube. You're having lunch. You're going to get a glass of water or a soda or whatever. There's not actual work happening that's more than 6 hours a day, in my opinion, on the regular. Like every day.
But it's a definition of work, because in creative work, let's be clear, you say that that he's working in game industry.
Right.
Let's be clear, on the way to the office or from the office, probably he doesn't shut down and thinks about, I don't know, new game mechanism, new algorithm or whatever.
So, all the time. Yeah.
And also you could argue that if being in another sync meeting is a work or not. Spoiler alert, probably not, but okay.
But maybe. Okay, so I get what the cargo thing is now. That makes perfect sense. What's the next one is legal? I wrote down the word legal.
Next
anyway.
One is corpulent, where ideas go to get aligned. So basically corporate world. So we are talking about the organization, big organizations like, to name a few, Microsoft, Amazon, Google, and so on. Where you have hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of people that quite often work on the same project, and they need to be synchronized, and everything needs to be protected from legal perspective, and you need to maintain it from... In Europe, there is a GDPR, something that every IT specialist is afraid of. In US, basically, general people's data is, there are different acronyms for that. GDPR is General Public General Data Protection Regulation or something like that.
Okay.
All right. So basically, it's a set of rules that the company cannot sell your data.
Okay.
In US, especially in California, there's the same. But it's
okay, sell your data. Okay.
It basically says that you always should have access to the data that company has about you, that you always can edit it, you can always request a deletion of it, unless it is required for some reasons, and we're going into legal jungle that nobody fully understands.
Right, on purpose, yes. But there's thousands of people who all have to...
Yeah, so basically this is the part where I'm stripping how it looks like from the engineer's perspective. So perspective. So yeah, of course, there's a reason why legal, HR, finance, and all those departments are needed, but it goes into the absurd levels and I'm making fun of it.
Right. So what is the... what is an example of one of the terms that they use that is mocked openly by yourself?
Maybe not a term, but basically finance saying we need to be financial savvy. which okay. basically means that no, you cannot have a new mousepad, but the management offshore will still happen in Dubai.
Right. Right. Okay. So it is the disconnect of, no, I seriously need a new laptop. And you're like, well, we're buying a jet instead.
Exactly. Something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Or maybe a little bit more technical. There is very wise, by the way, least privilege principle in security. So basically people who should have only access to what they really need to do the job.
Yep.
It's not like interns could have access to financial data of organizations. But it's quite often brought to the extreme. So my translation of least privilege principle from security perspective is, if you can do your job, we fail at ours.
Okay. Yeah.
Because quite often the privileges go way too far with restricting, and it slows down.
Right, right. It's just as far as your charisma and your charm can take you to some extent. And if you have access, okay.
Well, theoretically, in a corporation, all the charm and charisma should be eliminated, so that there are processes and procedures for that. But
right.
when you follow processes and procedures, you end up with stagnating everything. And
right, if nobody's massaging those procedures, then sometimes nothing really, not nothing gets done, but everything kind of slows down.
The subtitle for this part is that where ideas go to get aligned. So nothing is done, but nothing is really done, but everybody is aligned.
Everybody's aligned. Great. We're not doing anything. Nobody's planting any corn. But other than that, the things are happening. Okay, so the next one is the anarchy of startups.
Yeah, so basically that's where we go into charisma and pivots. So
okay. Personality driven.
On one hand, I'm making fun of, let's say, C-level everybody. That typical startup is structure is shaped like an umbrella. Because you have okay. 11 people and 10 of them are C-level managers.
Right.
And I even have an entire chapter with proposals for the more C-level positions.
Uh-huh.
Before you ask, my favorite was CESA, so Chief Emotional Support Coordinator. Which basically would be a founder's dog.
Oh, the founder's dog.
Yeah, because why not? In startups, that's enough to be a C-level.
Just we're bringing the dog to the giant open. Like, it's so weird with startups where they're like, no, it's going to be fun, except for that it's 90 hours a week, and everybody is their brain is. Did you ever see Free Guy?
Yeah,
it's a movie with the Daredevil guy, the Deadpool guy. Free Guy.
Yeah, Deadpool. Yeah. The one when the guy worked in the gaming company and suddenly ended up in the game.
Yep. It's
I watched. It was quite funny, actually.
Yeah, it's very sweet. And very, but it was, there's always that, when the first time Andy played a PlayStation, probably 20. The espresso machine is.
Yep.
Okay. It's like, here's where the espresso machine is, and here's, and it was PlayStation. So it was sort of both. They kept the ritual of having like free candy and soda and all these things, but they didn't know why they did it, because it was just there where they're like, yes, you could have individual potato chips, but you have to work like all
hustle
of these
culture,
hours. Yeah.
It really happens. I can tell you some more serious stories about that, but it's more about just coming up, hoping that we'll build the next big thing. And because we're running out of funds, then we need to, or nobody is interested with what we're building, we will pivot. So basically, suddenly we'll build something totally else, and so on. But
yeah,
again, this kind of creative freedom is needed to be creative for vision and stuff. But in many cases, I've seen the too often that it goes into absurds and extremes. And one of the core messages that I'm trying to say is that every extreme is bad. So it doesn't matter if we go in extreme formalism of corporation or extreme anarchy of startup. Both are bad, but despite the fact that both have their positives, we just need to balance it. So,
right. It just means that, I mean, the problem with some of this stuff is that they're just going through the motions. Because like you said, they haven't thought why is it nice to have free coffee? Why is it nice to, you know, why is it nice to have, they're like, oh, we're just doing this because it worked 9 companies ago. And
no,
that
that's
company
actually,
made,
yeah.
No?
Those free coffees, free gaming rooms and stuff, this actually makes sense. And that's easy to explain because if you don't have free coffee, then people will spend time to go to buy the coffee and then they stop working. If you have the coffee in the office, then they, even if they won't have a 5-minute break to go to grab a coffee, they will still meet somebody from the organization and talk about something kind of work related. And there is a morale aspect and stuff. So it does make sense.
Right. It makes sense. But the reason they did it initially was because the people that invented the wheel did it. And they're like, oh, they invented the wheel and they had time. And they cut out, hey, I'm going to walk down the block and smoke a cigarette and get a cup of coffee. You're like, well, here is a porch where you can smoke a cigarette and here's a coffee machine. And so they're not necessarily doing it for... What I like is I like a company that does it kind of for altruistic reasons because they know that it's good for the psychological part of the team. They're just like, they're not just doing it because, well, we're going to make sure that you don't ever have to leave your cubicle or this floor. And, but like I went to Nintendo in Seattle or whatever, and they have a cafeteria where the food is like almost free. If it might be free for the people who work there. The woman who showed me around, she just swiped her card and we both had lunch. So, but I think it's the reason they do it is because it's, then you're still on campus. You're still in the building and then you can get back to work faster. But I like the idea. I like the idea that they did it because lunch should be free. I don't know.
Sorry for breaking the belief, but in technological hubs like Seattle or Berlin, where I live, they did it because if they didn't, they wouldn't have employees.
Right. So, you've ruined my belief in Nintendo.
Certain extent, it's always good if they give something that motivates to lead a healthy life. So let's stick that. Never mind the motivations. If the outcome is good, then it's already positive.
Right. That there's a gym. There's a gym in the thing, yeah, or there's
the
a
campus.
Pool. Yeah.
Yeah, and maybe even the kindergarten so that parents can bring kids.
Oh, right, the childcare. Yeah, sometimes there's...
Probably that.
There's a reason.
Fruit Wednesday,
there's always...
Fruit Friday or whatever, this kind of stuff.
I want there to be a Fruit Friday. I'm now introducing Fruit Friday into stand-up comedian. So we're all bringing... It's Donut Thursday. That doesn't... to work alliteratively. Okay. So the startups, what are your favorite terms in the startup stuff? What are the phrases or terms? I mean, I think we might have covered it just because it is funny.
Well, in terms of pivots, There I think I did something like B2B, B2C, B2B2C.
B2B.
So those are different business models. B2B is business to business. So the basic, okay, which is a service that is provided to another enterprise. Then, okay, there can be B2C, which is a service that is provided to end users. Okay. Like, for instance, Gmail is a B2C.
Okay. That
makes sense. B2B, we would be a company selling, I don't know, CRM software.
Okay.
B2B2C is business to business to customer. So basically, okay, it is a product that is to build customer software, like, I don't know, Salesforce or other like that, where a company buys a software and builds a system for end users.
Okay.
Those are real cases and stuff. So a commentary. So with a commentary is B2B. We're trying to sell it to businesses. Then I think in the order was B2C. So we're trying to sell it to customers. Then B2B. Nobody wants to buy it, so we're trying to sell it to companies. Then B2B2C. It also didn't work, so maybe this will stick. And in a footnote, I have explanation what this B2B, B2C, B2B2C means, with a comment, add more bees until it works.
Just keep throwing noodles at the wall.
Yeah,
El dente, el dente, el dente, el dente. No.
Something like that.
Throw away the noodles.
But that's... I'm trying to explain this, but... You need to really look for the, be really, really motivated to find the educational value there.
Right. That's all I do. I just look around looking for the educational value of everything. Nerd. This one. Anyway, so the last one is this, the AI.
Yes.
The AI, which
AI
is...
AI goes all like around... Absurds of using sticking AI everywhere to everything, even if it doesn't make sense, but also explains how, shows how the entire industry evolved due to that. Like data engineers suddenly are just trying to fix the data that is used to train models. In some cases, I'm going full on with parody, like a popular term of vibe coding, which is pretty much hoping that computer can generate software which works only until it doesn't. Spoiler, it very quickly stops working.
Wow. Why? Oh, because are people attaching AI to everything? It's the new thing. But
yes,
it doesn't really make sense to.
So basically, okay, now we're going into the fact that we are in the investment bubble, in the middle of, at the end of a hype cycle. So basically, AI is a big thing. I'm not trying to say it's not. And it does change how the world operates, just like internet did.
Okay,
but we are in the bubble, in the investment hype cycle, investment bubble that will burst and it will be bad.
Right.
So during the cycle, everybody sticks the buzzword because they hope to get investors, even if it doesn't make sense. I don't know. 5 years ago, that was blockchain or NFTs. Bigger hype cycle was .com.
Okay.
In 1990s, early 2000, there was .com bubble, when it was enough to stick .com to the name of the company, and investors appeared.
Oh.
And
what? I forgot about that. That was nuts. You're right. It was because now everything has a .com.
Yeah, but basically, when internet became a big thing, when everybody understood that it will be a big thing, you had a bubble.
Yeah.
And yes, I'm old enough to remember that. So basically, there were monstrosities like pets.com, That was literally a zoological store online that got $50 or $60 million investment. Spoiler, it bankrupted in less than a year.
I bought FamilyPetAncestry.com because I was certain that everybody was going to want to know what the DNA of their pet was. And that would be a website name. This is a very small example. This is not like this. It's not the same with investments, but Family Pet Ancestry, because now there is. Everybody's like, well, I want to know what kind of dog my mutt is. And so you can do that, but nobody wants to buy it. I bought it as a joke, FamilyPetAncestry.com. It just points to JackieCation.com.
Yes.
Anyway, because it makes me laugh. But yes, the .com bubble, I remember that.
But there was that you just stick .com and look, investors throwing money without asking for a business plan.
Right. And then blockchain and NFTs?
That was the same.
The same, because people are like, this is going to be huge. People are going to buy the image.
I prefer to compare AI to .com than to blockchain, because blockchain didn't create anything. Well,
right.
There is Bitcoin. There are some changes in technological landscape, but didn't revolutionize. It didn't become the big revolution. It didn't create that much. But if you look at what happened during .com bubble, there were these absurds. There billions of dollars went to the drain this way.
Yep.
But that's when Amazon or Google were created.
Right.
Literally,
so
they
real
were,
things did come out.
They
of
were
yeah.
created from partially from invest during .com bubble burst, and
okay.
they were partially from that investment. The same will be is happening now. You stick AI to anything and hope that investors will come, and investors are coming. Most of that is failing, but the technological
Something.
Landscape, some will change, and some companies will come up from
all,
that, arise.
All that came from Bitcoin, as far as I can see, is that it's a great way to launder some money. And so good for you, people who invented Bitcoin. But the .com, I think it did it. Correct
it
me if I'm wrong.
It did create internet.
It kind of created an online shopping and all of this. We're going to do everything through this computer instead of going places. The .com did that. Yeah.
So basically, .com bubble, when people realize that internet will be a big thing, it will change the way people communicate, do shopping and stuff, started realizing that this will be big. Then investors wanted to hop on the bandwagon and started throwing money, believing that everything will grow. So they were following the hype of, oh, it's going digital into internet, so it has to be big, without looking at the business plan. That's simplified, but what happened? That's the same now. You have somebody comes, sticks AI to something, and investors magically appear without asking for anything.
Right. They're like, oh, this is going to change this. If we put AI on the pharmaceutical, you know, like you won't have to do anything. AI will do it. And they're like, close enough. Here's a giant bag of money.
Yeah, but there are already studies. There are already symptoms that it's bursting, because literally last month, MIT published a study saying that the failure rate among AI startups is much higher than in classical. It's not that every startup in the classical startups, there are successes all the time.
Right.
But if in regular startups, the failure rate was around 80%, I think, then among AI startups, it's above 95%.
Wow.
Then that was study from MIT, so it's not something that I'm coming up with.
Right, right. So it's real, and the crazy thing is, I mean, that makes sense. Like, so whatever the next anarchic, you know, introduction into the world, where who knows? It could be, I don't know. I don't know what it is.
Me neither.
The sentence went away at the end of it. We can't speculate until it is invented and then everyone throws money at it. I think it might be Dubai chocolate. What do you think about that?
Nah, oh, that's just
in Dubai.
It is
a $17 chocolate that has pistachios in it, and it's not enough. Don't do it. Don't fall for Dubai chocolate is what I'm telling the Dork Forest. Adam, let me just tell people real quick. I've been talking with Adam Korga. It has been almost an hour, just so you know. And it's at @AdamKorga_author on Instagram. And there's an AdamKorga.com. And the name of the book is IT Dictionary. And you could pre-order it now off of Amazon or wherever you get books. And on the 30th of September, it will drop and be available everywhere you buy books. So show us a copy. So if you're on the YouTube and you can see the copy, it's hardcover, you guys. So it's real. Yeah. Anyway.
There's also paperback.
Oh, it's also available in paperback. Both are coming out immediately. So get in on it because I hate traveling with hardcover. So is what I'm saying. Adam, thank you so much for... This is ridiculous and hilarious. Congratulations.
Thank you. And thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?